Welcome to the Positive Education Podcast with Ash Manuel. As we know, the number one hot topic in the world is mental well-being. Ash has worked with close to 1,000 organisations impacting more than a quarter of a million people, including schools, sports teams and businesses across 45 countries. Today, Ash is regarded as a global thought leader in positive education. In this podcast, you'll hear stories, information and actionable ideas from positive education and well-being experts. The purpose of the podcast is so that you take away ideas that you can execute in your classroom, across your school, at your sports club and in your organisation, plus tips and tricks that you can apply in your own life.
Hi everyone, I'm Ash Manuel, the host of the Positive Education Podcast, and today I'm talking with Mark Butler. Mark is a passionate student-centred leader who grew up in rural Ireland. Although he is now leading one of Abu Dhabi's top private secondary schools, Mark's path to education leadership was not via the conventional route. As someone who failed to connect with school throughout his post-primary education, Mark graduated not knowing which direction to take. Guided by his parents, he enrolled in the police force back in Ireland, where it was where he began to find his passion for working with students, eventually finding his way into education via Abu Dhabi, where he's gone on to lead a school of 200 staff and 1,200 students. Since his time in the UAE, Mark has had a significant impact on school culture at each of his posts. His passion is to support and develop students socially and emotionally, and has propelled him to the top of a very competitive market in Abu Dhabi. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Ash. Delighted to be here.
Excellent. So, Mark, we first connected about 3 years ago, and you had just started, I believe at that time, at the Emirates International School in Abu Dhabi. And I found your journey very interesting. Would you like to just tell us, the listeners, about your journey into education and a bit about your background?
Yeah, so, I mean, as you have mentioned there, Ash, I didn't take the conventional route. As someone who went through secondary school, a bit kind of perhaps misguided to begin with, failing to get that connection. I then enrolled into the police force, and that's really where I started to find my passion for working with youths. I started to realize I was good at it. I liked having an impact. I liked supporting students. And I really, you know, got passionate about social and emotional development. And it was this then that led me on to Abu Dhabi, where I became a head of pastoral care at Emirates National Schools in Abu Dhabi. A challenging role. Back in those times, I started in 2014. You know, we were lacking structure, we were lacking systems and policies. So a lot of work to do, but very, very rewarding and very, very satisfying to support so many students and having that kind of direct impact. And it was that passion then that, you know, propelled my motivation and my enthusiasm. I got promoted to assistant head of school, which I spent 2.5 years. That led me on then to a principal post of a K-12 school in Sharjah called Al Dhur International School. Another fantastic school. You know, we had a great well-being program running there. And then I returned back to Abu Dhabi then at the start of this year to Albertine Academy to return to my family. So it's been a good journey, something that I've really enjoyed. And if I was to go back to, you know, and talk about, you know, my early days at Emirates National Schools, when I first connected with you, you know, I had noticed at the time that our students were very, you know, fixated on grades, which is, you know, quite common. They just have this obsession with, you know, getting 90% average and, you know, getting these A's and A pluses, to the point where they'd almost do anything to get it. And we had, you know, a lot of plagiarism at the time. And it was around that time that I had noticed, I came across you on LinkedIn, and I had noticed some of your content you were sharing, just about gratitude, self-reflection, resilience, and positive habits like that. And that's when I connected with you. And, you know, we spoke back and forth for a while. You were kind enough to share a lot of the resources at that time. And I really just went with it. You know, I think in a pre-pandemic environment, it's a lot different to now. Well-being right now is quite a hot topic. We're back in 2018. It wasn't, you know, discussed as freely as it is now. So it was quite challenging to begin with, to try and implement a well-being program in a school that never had, you know, well-being on its curriculum before. So a couple of things like were really, really important. And that was, you know, getting explicit time to teach well-being. So having that explicit time within the schedule throughout the day. Now, in some cases, that was, you know, done through homeroom time, during the day. Other classes, perhaps done it at the start of the day. And one thing that I always found very important, I don't know if you've read James Clear's Atomic Habits, but habit stacking. So it's like, you know, something that's already running, then trying to stack on top of that. So we had assemblies running, every morning. So that was a habit that was, you know, running well every morning. So stacking on top of that, then we implemented, well-being assemblies once a week. And we would schedule these assemblies ahead of time. So on a rotating schedule. So each class would have its opportunity. So again, what you're doing there is you're habit stacking, and you also have a system of accountability. So, you know, the teachers know that there's a scheduled ahead where they have to prepare the students and get them to present, which is very important, those systems of accountability. But, you know, some of the impacts were just amazing. I had, a father call me one day and he said to me, he's like, you know, Mr. Mark, he says, you'll never guess what happened today. I said, so what? He said, Muhammad wrote me a thank you note. I said, what? Yeah, he said, he wrote me a thank you note. Just out of nowhere, he wrote me this thank you note saying how grateful he was for all the help that I've given him and all the support over the years. And the father said, like, he was, you know, almost in tears. So at this time, back in 2018, when, you know, gratitude, again, wasn't, I mean, when I first started this, honestly, the students weren't really able to articulate the word, you know, and all of a sudden now they're applying it and they're practicing it. So it was, it was a very, very rewarding time. Seeing the students present in assembly every week became a regular occurrence. We began to invite parents in to our assemblies every week as well. It was a really, really, you know, good time, and it had a huge impact. But as I said, it definitely was challenging to begin with. But I think systems of accountability, implementing, you know, process on top of other processes certainly helped.
Yeah, absolutely. You made some really interesting points there. And just going back to the academic, the emphasis on academic achievement, is that quite common across the whole UAE, whether that's parent pressure or society pressure that students, they feel that they have to get the best result maybe to please their family or to get into the best university? Is that what happens in the culture?
Yeah, I would say it's societal pressure, but it comes from scholarships. So if you get above 90%, you have a significant chance of getting a scholarship. So, and obviously, you know, tuition is not cheap across the world. So there is a lot of pressure on families, and you know, we certainly understand that. But we're trying to get to a point now where it's Maslow's before Bloom's, you know, and this has really come to the floor, especially during the pandemic. So one perhaps good thing that has come out of the pandemic is this, you know, emphasis now on well-being, where before, you know, it was always Bloom's, 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 and, you know, Maslow's was left behind. But definitely I've seen the shift here in the UAE recently, where, you know, people are thinking about Maslow's now. Are students' needs being met? Are they feeling safe? Are they feeling secure? So that has certainly started to change. There is still that pressure from, from colleges and to get those scholarships. But even, you know, parents are starting to realize now how, you know, the impact that the pandemic has had on kids, and that, you know, social emotional support is extremely important.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, you and I know that, and a lot of the listeners do as well. But it's interesting because you've gone to a school back, what year was that when you started the Emirates? Was that 2018? It was, wasn't it?
No, I started in 2014. So
in the Emirates?
I started in 2014. Yeah, in Emirates National School. Oh, right.
Yes,
yeah.
And then you became...
And I wasn't.
Yeah.
I got promoted to assist to vice principal of the school, and that's when I connected with you.
Yes, got it. That timeline makes sense. So that time when you came to 2018, when I think you you realised that it's probably a good time to try to implement something across the school, and you mentioned about the assembly. So using that time, and I totally agree with that. And one of the things that I always like to talk about is the four steps. So one of the four, first steps, first of all, that staff and the school need to be on board and want to do wellbeing, whether that comes from the school leaders and then it filters, funnels down to the staff and we train the staff. And then the next step is the actual time allocation, to actually allocate the time. And it doesn't have to be, as you said, you don't have to necessarily create extra time. You use the time that's already there, like assemblies, like homeroom time, where you can include wellbeing into those times. So I think what becomes sometimes overwhelming, particularly schools who are starting out a wellbeing program, how are we going to fit it in? What are we going to do? But as Mark just mentioned, using that time that's already there, we all have assemblies. Normally we have assemblies in a, hopefully we're getting back to assemblies up through after the pandemic, but most of us have some kind of morning time where we are together, and there's no better time than to use that for wellbeing. So, and that's a really good way to start. And then I think, Mark, you'll be able to speak about this from your experience. So that's how you started with those assemblies. Did it expand into other areas of the school, like in classrooms with individual lessons? How did it go from there?
Yeah, I mean, it was, as I said, in many cases it was assemblies, but you know, some of the primary schools would just embed it into their morning routine as well. Yep. So that became another process where, you know, they might have a procedure or something that they would do first thing in the morning. Yep. And then they would, you know, they would stack the well-being process on top of that. But yeah, I mean, to begin with, again, as you said, you know, a very important point, you do have to get buy-in. And sometimes, you know, it can be quite challenging. You know, staff might be, you know, think in some cases, oh, well, that's not my job or it's not my responsibility. But actually, well-being is everyone's responsibility.
Yep.
And you're trying to, you know, create like a committee or a team that extends, you know, across the whole school to really try and embed that. So what we also done is we used to have interdisciplinary projects. So we used to try and combine interdisciplinary projects, which, you know, it might be related to science, related, might be related to math, but we were also trying to embed aspects of the well-being within that as well. So we were trying to, you know, embed it across the curriculum, not just in assemblies and not just like, you know, a part of routines. So we might have different focuses then, like, you know, a well-being week, where the focus of the week might, you know, might be kind of talks on mental health, you know, different activities around the school. And I think that's, you know, that's probably as best as we got, as trying to get, you know, it filtered across all classes.
Absolutely. And when you talk about the interdisciplinary, integrate with different subjects, can you think of an example of how that could be done, like in other subjects, like integrating wellbeing, say, with maths, or integrating within physical education? Can you think back of how that was done as an example? Any examples?
I remember around exam time, there was a lot of pressure on students for studying and so on. So we were doing a lot of stress management practice. So like we're trying to, you know, teach students about coping strategies and positive reflection, whilst, you know, discussing different kind of studying strategies. Because, you know, exam times can be, you know, quite intense for students. We have mid-year exams and end-of-year exams. So, you know, let's say across kind of revision lessons, you'd have different emphasis then on, you know, on well-being as a kind of an introduction into you know, different revision processes.
Yeah, excellent. Now, I think I just want to highlight a couple of things for people who are maybe listening, who are starting out their well-being journey, or even if they are along the path of it, because I think we can always add to what we're already doing. And just to highlight the things, like, again, like adding it to assemblies, I think that's a great way, where one of the best ways that we learn is students teach what they're learning in class. So when each class as a term two present to the whole school, they're actually reinforcing their learning through teaching the whole school. And then the whole school is hearing the same message, including the teachers, the parents, and it just develops that culture across the whole school. And I reckon assemblies are a really good way to do it. And if even if you have that, or allocate 10 minutes to the assembly, if you only have one once a week, but just adding it in there. And it's a really profound way to include wellbeing. And those morning routines, like, it's such a good way. And it doesn't have to be long. And I know that was one of the reasons why we, at Growing with Gratitude, we created this Habits of Happiness wheel, where it's a bit of a fun way for the students to practice short habits. So for what the Habits of Happiness wheel is, it's like, if you think of the board game Twister, it's a wheel that you put up on the, it's an interactive game type thing, and you press a button, it comes up on the TV screen or the smart boards in the classroom, and it spins around, it lands on a number, and then it will tell you what the little activities you're going to do. So it's a bit of a randomized thing, but it's only a 2 to 10 minute activity. But the good thing about it is, though, it's a different way to practice each day. Those positive habits like Mark spoke about, whether that's gratitude or positive reflection, kindness, those type of little activities that can really help the culture of the classroom, but the whole school as well. So those morning routines, the assembly, if you can just start with that, that is a great start, and then you can work it out as you go. Because I know that each school is different, and the curriculum is so jam-packed in most schools, or in all schools really, and anything that gets added in can be quite overwhelming, particularly for the teachers. So from your perspective, Mark, where is your new school at? I know that you're back to Abu Dhabi now after being at our Dura. And Dura, yes. And that was a great school. So I know quite a few teachers at your school there, just out of Dubai. Not that I've been there personally, but just through social media, and they participate in some of our online events. And that they do a great job at
Aldura International School.
Yes. And they were doing a fantastic job there. Now, at your new school, I know that they have a wellbeing program established. So where's that at the moment?
Yeah, so we were lucky enough actually this year to have wellbeing lessons scheduled into the into the timetable. So every homeroom class across year 7 to 13 has a fixed time within the schedule. And that's not all schools, I realize, can afford to do that. Mm. We were lucky. We made some changes to the schedule. We went from 6 lessons to 7 lessons a day. We wanted to try and adapt the curriculum. Again, we were thinking of a post-pandemic environment. Yep. And we realized how important well-being is going to be after the pandemic. So we've got it in there, which is great. We've also now, we're in the process of appointing a well-being coordinator, which we hope, you know, we'll be able to tie the program together and, you know, provide that element of support. And again, I know that's not always possible within schools and, you know, tight budget requirements and so on. But we, you know, made a few changes and we were able to do it. But again, I think when it comes to well-being implementation, you know, the emphasis that you place on it, you know, that's where the impact is going to have as well. If you're explicitly trying to, you know, implement it within the school, embedded, you know, across the environment, you will see an impact. So yeah, we're hoping to appoint this well-being coordinator within the next few weeks. And as I said, you know, in my message, we're still at the very early stages.
Yep.
But we, you know, we're getting a lot of support from our HQ as well. So we have this kind of well-being initiative coming from HQ, where we're trying to, you know, gather up. They're counting. We're trying to get 50 million minutes of well-being lessons across all the Aldar schools. And so that's kind of, creating more of awareness, and so we are getting quite a bit of support from HQ, and that's, you know, that's a well-being campaign that's, you know, obviously helping us as well. So yeah, it's you know, as I said, it's still quite early, but we're definitely on the right path.
Absolutely. When you say HQ, does that mean the headquarters? What's HQ?
Our school's head office. So basically, we have like a central office. Who you know support the school from administrative purposes.
And how many campuses do you have under the?
So we have eight schools within Aldar Education. Across the Emirate of Abu Dhabi. And then we have a lot of sister schools, charter schools, like 20 or maybe 20 to 30 that they go across Abu Dhabi. So it's quite a big group.
Cool. Yeah, totally makes sense. So just going back, Mark, how did you actually create the extra time? How'd you go about adding that extra, the seventh lesson a day? So you mentioned about how this it has become a priority for the school, and it's fantastic that you've been able to make it happen. So how did you open up that time?
Well, you see, we run the DP program, the IB diploma program, for our year 12 and year 13 students. So the higher level subjects require extra time. So it was kind of a knock-on effect as well. You know, it suited us to, we needed some more time for that, but we also wanted more time for well-being. We've also implemented like a bridging the gap lessons because obviously, you know, to support students in a post-pandemic environment. And we've also implemented DEAR lessons, which are drop everything and read. So we're trying to, you know, promote literacy, trying to promote reading. We're supporting bridging the gap, well-being. So again, you know, when they were reviewing the schedule towards the end of last year, it was like, what's needed in the post-pandemic environment? Mm. What do the students need? What have they missed? And we knew that obviously there was going to be gaps that need to be addressed. Well-being was going to be a huge focus. You know, literacy, we want to promote reading and the diploma program as well. So it wasn't just well-being alone. It was more or less, okay, we need to look at this from a post-pandemic perspective. What do we need? And well-being was in there.
Fantastic. So does that mean you like shortened the other lessons to fit the extra lesson in, or just added extra time onto the day?
Correct. Yeah. So we would have shortened the lessons like by 5 minutes.
5 minutes, and that accumulates to an extra probably half hour, 40 minutes.
Well, yeah. So then, and we had shortened the break times as well.
Oh yeah.
To fit in, yeah. So I know we finished like 5 minutes later as well.
All right, yeah. So extend the day by 5 minutes, reduce recess and lunchtime breaks, and reduce each lesson time to fit that lesson in, probably each by 5 minutes or so. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. And I think that's a great example of when you identify something that's really important. And I think that's where it really fits in. Like I think you made the point before, when the school leadership really highlights that wellbeing is really needed, which I think, as you said before, it's the number one hot topic, probably not only in schools, probably the world at the moment. And I think we're beginning to, well, if people didn't before, they're really beginning to realize post-pandemic the importance of it. And basically, it's always talk about ownership. It's about the schools taking ownership of it to implement it themselves. I mean, particularly the non-government schools, the independent schools, private schools, whatever you want to call them. And they have probably a bit more flexibility to implement things, but it does take work and it does take action to make it happen. And that's a perfect example of taking action to or make wellbeing a priority in the school. That's the thing, like it might have taken a bit of planning, but it's not that, I mean, be careful what I say. I don't think it's that hard. It might sound on paper, so what you just told us then, how you drifted by 5 minutes, it doesn't sound that hard, but it might have been a bit more challenging that to convince other people. So how did you have any challenges or any fight back? I'm not sure if that's the right word. Fight
resistance?
Back. Resistance, that's the one.
Did we have any pushback? I mean, not necessarily. We actually... the breaks were actually shorter at the start of the year, but we got some feedback from students and from parents, and we realized that we had to, you know, readjust again. So we actually extended the break since the beginning of the year, based on feedback. So again, you know, we're not rigid, you know, we're quite flexible as well with feedback, and we realized that, you know, you have to readjust at certain times. I mean, look, even now with the well-being implementation, we still have resistance at times. You still have parents think, "What, you know, why are we doing this?" And, you know, and that's quite normal. And I suppose you're always going to get that to a certain point. Parents in general sometimes can be quite traditional, absolutely. You know, and they want to learn the same way. Sorry, they want their kids to learn the same way they did. That's not always applicable now.
Can I just butt in there, Mark? How do you address that with parents? So if they come to you and say, "Why are we doing this? We don't understand why." How do you address it? Because I think that's a challenging thing for a lot of school leaders.
It is. I suppose I'm very, extremely passionate about well-being. Yep. So I find it quite easy to engage with parents with this. Yep. I enjoy doing it, if anything. Yep. Yep. But it is a challenge. And in our school, you know, we have the IGCSE program and DP program in you know, the senior school. And they're, you know, very, very rigorous external assessments. So there's a lot of pressure on students to really achieve the highest, you know, grade possible. So I mean, it is a challenge, but I'm trying to, you know, put emphasis on the importance of this. Like I said before, like we're trying to say Maslow's before Bloom's. But again, you know, we know that now the what employers want is starting to change. They're looking for character. They're looking for leadership. They're looking for resilience. You know, they're looking for, you know, someone who's humble, who's respectful. I'm trying to, you know, create that shift, because I've seen it myself, Ash, where, you know, I have interviewed teachers in the past and they'd have an excellent profile, they'd have amazing qualifications. Yeah. But then you test their character in an interview and it comes out, you know, quite negatively. Mm. And that's an immediate red flag. And I try to say that to students. It's like, okay, you can get these, you know, high grades, you can get into these excellent colleges, which is great. We want you to do that. But who are you behind the qualifications? You know, what's your character? Are you resilient? You know, do you reflect? Are you going to be grateful? Are you, you know, respectful? Are you going to have a positive mindset?
Yep.
So, you know, these are the conversations that we have. And these are ongoing, Ash. They're happening every day and they'll continue to happen. And that's fine. That's okay. You know, we don't mind. We don't mind that.
Yeah.
So it's an ongoing battle, but it's something that we really want to continue.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, 100%. And I think one of the things that you mentioned there, I always talk about this with young people as well, but also in sports teams. So in the same way, the same thing is in sport. Like if you have equal talent, but the clubs or the teams, if you've got a choice and you've got a bit of a reputation, a bit of a rascal and a bit of a, well, not a team player, an individual compared to someone who shows those good character strengths, like they're a good person, they're kind, they're empathetic, that they're appreciative, those type of things, they're going to get the nod ahead every time. If it's a split decision, like equal talent, but they're always going to get, and even probably less talent in a way, but if they're coachable, they got the good attitude and the good mindset, reflect on the good things that happen, all those sort of positive traits, they're always going to get the nod, and they always come through in the end. And if we can teach young people those skills from a young age, as you said, like their careers is going to blossom a lot more than they probably would ever expect, and a lot quicker. But teaching those in school, even from like a primary school age, like 5-6 years of age, starting to plant that seed, and they come up and grown up with it their whole schooling life, they're going to be so far ahead of any generation before, and have a massive advantage. And I think, I know that you agree with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's studies now to show, Ash, that EQ, emotional intelligence, is just as important as IQ, if not more important. You know, some studies show that it's more important, that it has shown to be more important, you know, with certain employees and throughout different companies. So it's trying to, you know, put that emphasis. And I really wish that someone had taught me these things when I was in school. I didn't learn these till my late 20s, you know? Exactly. So that's my mission now, is to teach the things, teach those things.
Oh, absolutely. And that's 100% right. Same with me. I learned these skills when I was probably about 30, I reckon, wish I learned them when I was younger. And that's one of the reasons why I started growing with gratitude, because I learned these skills as an adult. And I wish I learned them when I was younger, because it had such a positive impact. And just like learning a skill in a sport, we can learn and teach young people these skills so that they are they're skills that can be taught and learned. And the earlier, obviously, we teach them, the bigger advantage the young people are going to have. But also teaching them as well. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a three-year-old or 103-year-old. When we talk about gratitude, it's relevant for everyone. I mean, obviously, the context and the age you're talking to, it might slightly change about how you talk about it, but the whole concept is relevant. And the great thing about it is if you're teaching it to your students, then you're getting that benefit as well as a teacher and as an educator. So it's sort of definitely a two-way thing for sure. So Mark, going back to the lessons, I think that's such an important thing. So if you go back to the steps that you were talking about before, going from the Emirates school where you had the assembly and the starting of the day with your routines, it's a great way to start. And then I reckon that next progression is to have an allocated lesson, because in that four-step system I was talking about, one of the steps is time allocation. So allocating the time in the day to do it, whether that is a morning routine, but ideally a lesson a week or however many in a timetable, and then the consistency of it. So always think back to having a focus of, say, well-being for a month. So you might have a month of it where students are doing it in the classroom, and that might be in term one. But then term two, three, and four go by, and you haven't done it since. So, and then you might start the year again and do the same thing, but you're sort of starting again. And it's like learning how to shoot a basketball. If you do it for 4 weeks and then don't revisit it for another year, you're probably going to be about the same or haven't improved at all. But yeah, the key is consistency. So I think having that lesson really keeps it consistent across the whole school. But most importantly, the students, they get the consistency. So I like to think about it as consciously giving the opportunity to practice. So we're actually providing the opportunity for the young people to practice these skills and build the habit. So over time, when they do consciously practice, it becomes a habit over time. That's what I'm trying to say. So as they get older, they're just wired this way to think positively. If they're having a bad day, we'll go back a step. So we're going to have bad days. We're definitely going to have bad days. And that's nothing wrong with that at all. We're people. But it's important that we teach the young people the skills of how to deal with challenging situations. And what works for me might not work for you, but open them up to different ideas. So, like, for example, last week I was doing a workshop with the year nine girls at a girls' school. And it was the fourth session out of four that we did. And I ended up by saying, look, over the last 4 weeks, we've gone through some different ways that we can practice to be grateful. We practice empathy. So these are all ideas, but it's up to you to find out what works. So we practice gratitude more than one way. So I didn't say, okay, this is what you got to do. It's about, okay, we've shown you ideas. I'd highly encourage you to find out what works for you, because what works for me might not work for you, but see if you can find something that works. So I think it's really important that we do show young people the ideas through that lesson time, and give them as much exposure as we can so they can find their own things that work. Because at the end of the day, we're responsible for our own well-being. Like, yes, as teachers and as educators, we can share ideas, but the only person who can actually execute it is yourself. But we need to allocate the time and provide the opportunities for young people to practice so they're exposed to it, so they can develop their own ways. So I think that's a fantastic thing the school is doing. How is it actually going? Because is that a relatively new thing, or is it being going for a while, that lesson? I think you said at the start of the year, wasn't it?
Yeah, start of the year.
So your school year is only in August.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's only been going a few months. So how's that sitting at the moment with the lesson, the feedback from the teachers, the kids, the parents?
Well, it was actually implemented at the start of the year, and we didn't have a wellbeing coordinator. And obviously, yeah, I'm new to the school as well. So, you know, I've been readjusting as the weeks go by. And I seen this, there was an area of development within it, and I knew that it needed a well-being coordinator appointed, yeah, to kind of, you know, yeah, keep, I suppose, people accountable, to keep, you know, the direction going, and to add a bit more structure, because what you don't want, Ash, when it comes to well-being is like, you know, free time or it's device time, because then it loses its momentum. And that's when you'll have negative feedback from parents and even students as well. So you're really trying to keep it as structured and as meaningful as possible. And that only comes through like consistent messaging from, you know, leadership, consistent focus. And that's why I was so keen just to appoint, you know, a coordinator. So, you know, they will add more structure. They will add more leadership and guidance to the role. So I'm really looking forward to getting that person in place.
Have you advertised for that yet?
Yes.
Yep.
Excellent. We have, yes. So interviews are due to start next week.
Fantastic. So I think it's an interesting point because here in Australia, particularly in where I am in Adelaide in South Australia, we have a lot of wellbeing coordinators or pastoral care, but their main role ends up being behaviour management. So if a child has a bit of a bad day, they might have to deal with that child. And it just seems to take over. And then the poor wellbeing coordinator doesn't have time to actually implement something across the whole school. So I think it's such an important thing to have that wellbeing coordinator whose sole job it is to run the actual wellbeing program in the schools. So where the students are actually participating in activities to build those resilience skills, those is really important in skills. And having somebody overseeing, I like to call them the hero, that hero who is that leader or that committee who drives it, because without them, it's easily fall away. And I think that's what you've identified as well. And I think you could go in there and employ a wellbeing coordinator straight away on this journey, but a good way to start is, as we said before, the assemblies, the allocating the time at the start of the day to get it started. And once that's up and running, then that coordinator might be able to be brought on. Do you have a view on that, Mark, about when the best time is to bring someone in? Is it straight away or after some time of a bit of implementation? What do you think?
Well, I suppose you have to gauge it, because from school to school, you might find someone who's really passionate about it. They might want to take it on without like an allowance or without a kind of a stipend or without release time to begin with, you know, because at the beginning, you know, it's very important not to get too bogged down in the detail. Like you just have to, you know, start. You have to start somewhere, and step by step, then you'll gather more momentum. So, I mean, at the beginning of the year, it was very hectic start. It was students were back in the building for the first time. So trying to get in a coordinator at that time was, you know, would have been quite challenging. But as, you know, as the weeks have gone by, you know, we started to realize that there was a need for this, and you know, as we advertised, there was quite a bit of interest. So again, you kind of have to gauge the staff that you have, and the timing also is important. I mean, if we had advertised for this in the first few weeks, no one would have applied. Yeah. You know, it was just such a hectic start. But you know, as things settle down, people begin to look ahead and start to look for, you know, leadership opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point, actually, because you're right. Some schools, most schools have that well-being or that person who's just so passionate about it, whether that's a teacher who's in the classroom already. And often they'll initiate stuff in their own class and then hopefully those little things across the school as well. So definitely a good place to start. Now, Mark, just before we wrap this fantastic conversation up, do you have any, advice for schools starting out on their wellbeing journey? Because I know that you've, as we said, you've started from scratch, but also then you've come into a school that have got something up and running. And yeah, any advice for schools, particularly starting out or who have just started?
Yeah, I mean, I think you made a very valid point earlier, Ash. You know, it's very important to separate your wellbeing curriculum coordinator, let's say, from your pastoral care and support. So in our school, like we have we're very lucky. We have an excellent system in place. We have our vice principal of pastoral care, and they have heads of year over each year group, and then our form tutors. So they're, you know, there to support from a pastoral aspect. So this curriculum, wellbeing curriculum or program, you know, coordinator is purely to, you know, embed wellbeing, let's say, across the school. And also what I would say is, you know, to new schools starting out is try and form a committee, perhaps. You know, you might not have one person who wants to take it on alone, but you might have some people who are into sports, who are into, you know, mental health and well-being. Try and form a committee and you can get some buy-in. If you have four or five people, it's much easier then to, you know, distribute load and distribute responsibilities. And you'll have a greater, you know, extension across the school, because it can be a daunting task for one person to take on alone, especially in, you know, different contexts and different culture. So, you know, get a team of like-minded people together, 4, 5, 6 people if possible. And it'll definitely, you know, help as you try to roll out something new. And you're going to get change as well. Sorry, you're going to get resistance to change. That's quite normal. You know, whenever teachers or, you know, staff see something new come out, they do tend to resist. But again, as buy-in and you keep the messaging is consistent, you know, the buy-in will come. And when teachers start to see student impact, you know, that's when you really start to gather momentum.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree with that. And I think sometimes you're not going to have buy-in from those particular teachers. They're at every school. It's just the way it is. And that's totally fine. But it's important to focus on the ones who are keen. And then, as you say, over time, the other ones generally do follow. If you did hear
exactly. background,
sorry, man.
I was going to say exactly. You know, you're right. One thing to say, you know, from all of the principal leadership books, you know, when you're trying to implement something new, is, you know, find someone who has a bit of influence within the team. You know, if you can get them on board, it's that influence starts to filter down across the school. So that's another key point.
That is a key point, absolutely. Now, I'm not sure, about a minute ago, you might have heard a big bang in the background. A magpie just ran, flew straight into the window. just actually one thing. So with the lesson allocation that you've got now, I know that one of the issues is that teachers do have is time to create their own lessons in the wellbeing space, because if it's something that's added on. So how do you go about implementing, or how do the teachers go about those lessons? Do you use an outside external program, or you've got your own internal resources? How do you go about it?
Yeah, so I mean, we have our own internal resources that we're kind of gathered over the years.
Yep.
And we're quite flexible with it. So we might give them, the teachers, you know, we give them a lot of autonomy over it. So it might be, topic might be, you know, resilience or, you know, gratitude.
Yep.
And, you know, we give them a roadmap, but they can get their own resources and they can, you know, design the lesson themselves. But that's how it's currently working.
Yep.
But I am very keen to bring in a more structured program.
Yep.
That has more, you know, clearer outcomes.
Mm.
You know, and because what I don't want is to put too much pressure on the teachers. I don't want to, you know, have them to make everything from scratch as well.
Yeah.
You want them, you know, you want it quite structured, because let's not forget, teachers are teaching their own curriculum as well. So, you know, they're already quite busy, and we're very conscious of that. So that's why, you know, the wellbeing curricular coordinator coming in will, you know, will support with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that I found probably back in 2014 when I first started Growing with Gratitude while still a teacher. And that was the feedback from the teachers in the classroom. They understood, majority understood the benefit, but they didn't want to have to create all the resources and lessons themselves because they had all the other curriculum to teach, which I totally understand. And that's one of the reasons why the Growing with Gratitude got lessons, so they can implement teach them themselves and have that more structure, because it's just one of those things where some teachers are really keen to act. They want to do it. They want to create their own lessons because they probably get joy out of it and they love it, a bit of creativity, but others, they really want to do it, but they just don't have the time. So having that variety, having that structured program that teachers can call on, or they can create their own resources, having that flexibility, I think is important too. Now, Mark, really appreciate your time, mate. I think we'll wrap it up there, because there's a whole lot of takeaways that whether you're a school leader or a teacher that you can definitely apply to your school. Now, if people want to reach out to you, where can they find you, whether that's on social media or an email address? We can put these in the show notes as well.
LinkedIn is probably the easiest, Ash. So Mark Butler at LinkedIn.
Yep.
You'll find my profile pretty easy. So I'm happy to, you know, engage with anyone or just message me, connect with me, message me privately. I'm more than happy to you know, respond and provide any support where I can.
Brilliant, mate. I'll put your link to LinkedIn link to in the show notes, so people can contact you if they want to. So, Mark, really appreciate your time. I hope you have a great lead up, great rest of the term and going into Christmas and into the new year. And we really appreciate you having or having you on the show today, and thank you for your insights.
Thanks so much, Ash. It was great to be here. As I said, I've been a big fan of yours since 2018, so it was a pleasure to be here today. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.